What is going on? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on in to the first of the Week 6 NFL podcasts. We have the Week 6 game-by-game breakdown coming at you here. I've got Vegas data. I've got AFPA, Fantasy Points Allowed, matchup data here. Overview of the slate, trying to give you a sense of exactly what's going on and where. Going to have tomorrow the player breakdown. It's going to be a big one. I'm thinking of a slight restructuring of the pod tomorrow based on pricing. Just because one of the things you're going to notice if you get in specifically on FanDuel, and I've noticed this about FanDuel, is they clearly wait 30-day marks as part of their model, their algorithm. So you see instantly, you see prices really adjust in a big way coming out of week five because we've passed that 30-day mark for these guys. So it's interesting, man. You see this shoot up the ladder as far as just as market share and stuff like that. Guys who are getting a lot of work, they take a big jump forward because of that 30-day thing that influences the algorithm on FanDuel. So pricing has become sharper based on players. I mean, we had Todd Gurley last week at 7,800. He played worse and his price went up. It's like, why is this happening? Well, because now there's 30-day data and they were waiting to input 30-day data in order to influence pricing. Pricing gets sharper. You know, so that's how it works. So I'm thinking I'm going to break down that in a little bit of a different form and fashion. It'll allow us to also, I think, probably speak a little bit more towards wide receiver variety, which matters a lot more on DraftKings from a pricing perspective. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an interesting week. There's a lot of players in play. That's the thing, is there's a lot of pieces in play next week. And we got to jump right into it. I mean, let's take a look at this week six slate. One thing I want you guys to be aware of as we head in, I'm going to talk about the Thursday game, and then I'm going to start in on the main slate. I organize the games based on total from lowest all the way up to highest. So kind of a slow burn, right? Nice little slow burn here, getting you from low to high. We're still waiting on a couple totals for games like the we're waiting on the Oakland total. I think they're waiting to see if Derek Carr is going to play or not. But I said what I projected, the Sean Sportsbook projected. Anyway, all right, I'm rambling. First game of the slate, Philadelphia, Carolina, Thursday night in Carolina. 45-point over-under, 46, excuse me. Carolina, 3-point home favorites, getting that home field nod. 21.5 to 24.5. This total actually went up a point after the weekend. I think people jumped on it, seeing these offenses do really good work. But the real truth is, I mean, these are two quality defenses on short rest. I think you're going to see the defenses probably shine over the offensive pieces because, you know, Carolina in adjusted fantasy points allowed. And by the way, guys, I'm going to go through these for every team, AFPA. It'll go quarterback, running back, wide receiver. 8th to the quarterback, 11th to the running back, 12th to the wide receiver. Philadelphia, 16th to the quarterback, 5th to the running back, and 27th to the wide receiver. But if you listen to yesterday's pod, we see that a lot of Philadelphia's production just comes in short bunches of yardage, okay? They're not giving up deep balls here, which is how Carolina gashed Detroit, deep routes. Ed Dixon was deep. Calvin Benjamin went for a deep touchdown. Two deep touchdowns, actually. So that's kind of a thing that we have to consider here if you want to attack these Carolina pass catchers. It may not be as sexy as we may think. But here's an interesting stat, okay? These are the two best offensive lines right now, according to individual personnel grades on Pro Football Focus. 1 and 2. And Philadelphia certainly has proved that. They're able to run the ball on anyone. They're giving Carson Wentz the time to throw 60 yards down the field to Nelson Agholor and Torrey Smith. And Cam the same. He, you know, got plenty of time the other day against Detroit. And that's been a halfway decent pass rush. So, You know, offensive line play, just it's something that I'm constantly trying to pay attention to because it can instantly change the composition of an offense for the better or for the worse. The tempting thought here is that, you know, Carolina pass catchers, Cam has been hot. We know the Philadelphia defense ranks. Thursdays are bad. Thursdays are a bad night for wide receivers, a bad night for skill position players. These defenses are both very solid. I don't see this game being very high scoring. I feel comfortable with the under, but very, very slightly. I think it's like a 42-point total. I think it's very much like a 20-17 type game. If you twist my arm, I'm going to really watch. I won't mind watching this game because I want to see these two teams face up against each other because they kind of profile similarly, right? Not a stellar running game, built on solid defense, built on really a solid front seven, decent back end, and two quarterbacks who have arm talent, can move their legs and really throw the ball down the field, but are not necessarily perfect. They're not perfect just yet. So I think it's an interesting matchup. These two teams are kind of similar in some ways. You twist my arm if you really, really want to play this Thursday slate, which I don't necessarily agree with. McCaffrey, Benjamin, I think so. Funches is, resting. He's got an injury of some kind, so I don't know if we're going to see him. But that's about it. I don't really think I'm going to go there. I don't know that I'm going to go to Philadelphia in this one. Maybe Alshon. I don't know. It's not that interesting to me. Beginning on the main slate, Chicago at Baltimore. This one is a 40-point total. We have two games that are 40-point totals on the FanDuel main slate. This one is on the main slate on DK as well. 16-23, Baltimore full touchdown favorite in Baltimore. Listen, I don't know how many people watched that game last night, but Trubisky looked good. Four key plays got taken away from him that would have completely changed box score watching and the perception of this game. Four key plays. You ready for this? One, first pass into the red zone on their first offensive series. He gets the ball inside the red zone on a beautiful bootleg throw. Gets called back on holding on the edge. I tweeted last night, Mike Glennon's packing his bags because Mike Glennon can't make that throw. And Trubisky made a laser throw out to the outside right edge and put them in the red zone. He put them in Vikings territory, and he got called back. And so we all kind of go, oh, well. But it was a questionable holding call. It was on the edge, you know. The Jordan Howard touchdown run. The Bears have a lead in the first half. They go into halftime with a lead. He is called back for holding as well. Marcus Wheaton holding, who got under the corner shoulder pads, but then he released it. It was kind of like Wheaton could have blocked him without holding him, and he would have been fine with the way Jordan Howard was headed upfield. That would have changed the game because I think you would have had Minnesota playing from behind for a while. There was another pass into the red zone where there was offensive pass interference. Trubisky put it right on the money. Wide receiver pushed his hand off of the Trey Wayne's face mask. OPI got called back. That was inside the 10. It was a beautiful throw. And then the last one is they're on the 40-yard line. It's 4th and 1. They're clearly going for it. John Fox forgets to stop the clock and call timeout so they can set up 4th and 1. They get called for delay of game. They were going to continue the drive, and another red zone opportunity, head punt instead. Four key plays that if any single one of those goes differently, the entire narrative on Trubisky changes. And if the narrative is, he looked good, but who knows? Bullshit. Kid looked great. He's the best quarterback that they've had in a long time. The whole offense could see it. Everybody in the stadium could see it. It just didn't come out in the end. And the Harrison Smith interception at the end of the game, you may look at that and go, well, you know, he threw a key interception there. Man, fuck off, key interception. The Harrison Smith is the third best safety in the league. He knows how to get under people's skin. He picked off James Winston twice. Harrison Smith is good. That's a playmaker. Don't you just give respect. He's 6'3", 220-pound safety who broke on the ball when Trubisky was trying to make a play. Probably shouldn't have forced the ball, but You're late in your late in game, third down in your own red zone. Come on. So Trubisky looked great. And I think this game is going to be a snooze because these two defenses are actually pretty good. But I think the Bears can cover is basically where my whole Trubisky analysis led to that. Chicago ranked 15th in AFPA, 16th to the running back, 5 to the wide receiver, and 19th to the tight end. Very interesting that they're so highly rated against wide receivers right now. Considering, think of who they've seen. They've seen Julio. They've seen AB. They have seen Stephon Diggs. They have seen a lot. They've seen the Packers entire way. Like, they've gotten gashed in certain situations, but according to the metrics, they're actually not that bad. And they looked excellent last night against this secondary for Minnesota. You know, Branford shouldn't have been playing, but even after Keenum came in, they looked very good. Baltimore 10 to the quarterback, 21 to the running back, 7th to the wide receiver. We know this pass defense is no joke, and I'm not going to start any of these pass catching offenses or pass catching options here, but I'll tell you who I'm very interested in. I'm very interested in both running backs. This game is going to be a snooze. It is going to be ground and pound. Jordan Howard is going to get plenty of touches throughout the entire game. And he played, listen, he had 19 touches for 76 yards last night. One of those touches got called back on holding, and it was a 40-yard touchdown. If that changes, his entire fantasy outlook looks way different. Everybody's all over him this week, no question in my mind. Baltimore susceptible to the run, 123 rush yards per game. We know if John Fox wants to run, pound the ball, that he will do it. They did it against the Steelers. The Steelers ran the ball against Baltimore. you know, this is a team that you can run the ball against, no doubt about it. And I think on the opposite side, maybe Buck Allen, just because we know we'll get volume if they get ahead here. And they're going to just kind of slow things down. Another 40-point total. New York going to Denver. This is the Sunday night game. So thank God for those of you, for those of us playing on DraftKings. We don't even have to think about this game because it's going to be a fucking bloodbath. 40-point total. Denver favored by 11.5, 26 points for Denver and 15 for the Giants. This is a disaster. The Giants have no wide receivers. Marshall shut down. Odell shut down. Shepard is out. They have a platoon of replacement level running backs in Darkwa and Shane Vereen. We all know that Wayne Gallman is hashtag elite. I'm kidding, but he's not going to do anything against this Denver team. Cause here are the numbers, right? Giants are 19th and their defense is not the same. It's just not the same this year. They're good on the back end, but they don't have a pass rush right now. They don't have a front seven. 19th against the quarterback, 26th to the running back, 2nd against the wide receiver, and 31st against the tight end in AFPA across the board. Denver 17-1 against the running back, 19 against the wide receiver, 23 against the tight end. So they're proving slightly susceptible to pass catchers this year, but you really have to also consider the fact that they've been putting teams in negative game script and forcing teams to throw on them because no one can run the ball. So they're just seeing a massive volume of passes. I mean, that's why Dez Bryant saw good work in that Denver game. You know, that kind of thing. So Denver's defense is too good to even consider here. CJ Anderson is the only guy that I like. He's going to go under own on the FanDuel main slate. He will. And I think he's at home. His team is, you know, he's at home. He's a massive favorite. His team is coming off of extra rest. They're getting a Giants defense that is just completely and wholly demoralized. There's nothing to fight for. They're 0-5, and they just lost their best player and then their second receiving option. Like, what is left to fight for on this team? The offensive line has no reason to try and make this a thing. Like, this should be a developmental tank year for them, and they should, like I've said this before. So CJ in positive game script. He saw 20 carries last time out against the Raiders. He just hasn't gotten in the end zone in a couple weeks. So, I think it's okay to go to him as a contrarian option. He's just going to go overlooked and under owned. I think it's very possible that you see, you know, a nice 120-yard line from him. 120 yards, 22 touches, maybe a touchdown. That would be really nice. I think that's exactly what the best case scenario is for CJ, and I think it's very possible. We saw Melvin Gordon last week do it. Broncos defense very much in play as well. Eli will probably see his life, just flash before his eyes here. This is going to be a disaster. It's over. It's over. It's over. Blow up the Giants again. Rams, Jacksonville, 43.5 points down in Florida. 20 implied for the Rams, 3.5, Jacksonville, 3-point favorites, 3.5-point favorites. But the total has moved. Jacksonville now only 2.5-point favorites. Listen, this is a running back spot. You get two elite volume running backs, and here are the numbers on the Rams. 11 to the quarterback, 32 in AFPA to the running back. So Leonard Fournette, let's go. 11 to the wide receiver and 18 to the tight end. On the Jacksonville side of things, they are the toughest opponent for quarterbacks in the NFL and adjusted fantasy points allowed. They are number one, 28 to the run, and 3 to the wide receiver, and 24 to the, interestingly enough, 24th to the tight end. Tough spot for both quarterbacks, no doubt about it. I mean, Jared Goff is undoubtedly the more talented quarterback, but he has the rougher matchup here. Bortles is not talented, and he has a tough matchup here that Russell Wilson struggled in this matchup. I mean, and Bortles is no Russell Wilson, that's for sure. Gurley versus Fournette, it's got to be Fournette for me, I think. At home, Rams have been, gashed by the running back. We saw in multiple weeks in different situations them getting really torn up by running backs. Didn't happen last week, but who on that offensive line was going to block for Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy? I mean, they split the carries. They're terrible. So, and Leonard Fournette is the opposite of terrible. He's excellent right now. So I certainly think it's Leonard Fournette here. Have a lot of interest in him. Just from a volume and red zone perspective, because you know he's going to get the red zone work. You know he's going to get the goal line work. On FanDuel, you want that touchdown. Feels like a good spot to get it. Tampa Bay at Arizona, 44-point total in this one. Tampa Bay, 2-point favorites is 23 implied for them at 21 to Arizona. This game feels trappy. Feels like a trap house. Just ugly, man. Arizona defense, they just got carved up by Philadelphia. Tampa Bay offense that can really throw the ball, some pass catching assets that you're just like, oh baby, this sounds great. I want to go all in on Mike Evans. I want to go all in on Deshaun Jackson, and they're going to do the exact same thing Carson Wentz did. It just scares the hell out of me. Something feels like it could go wildly wrong. Tampa Bay, 28th in production to the quarterback, 7th against the running back, very solid against the running back. So just hold those AP shares in check. If you're interested in firing up Adrian Peterson, this may not be the week. 32 to the wide receiver and 4th to the tight end. Arizona, 25th to the running back, 9th to the 25th to the quarterback, 9th to the running back, 30th to the wide receiver, and 13th to the tight end. So these two defenses are funnel defenses. They are exact replicas of each other. They're doing the exact same thing. They have great front sevens, decent pass rushes, guys who can, stop any running game. But they allow a lot of production to the quarterback and the wide receiver. The question is like, do we want to continue to go to these Arizona pass catchers in these games? I mean, you want to go to Larry Fitzgerald because he's seen double-digit targets every single week, but at the same time, you know that this offense has been stalling out. They can't score touchdowns. It's hard to predict who's going to score the touchdowns. It's just absolutely very difficult. It really sets up as an amazing Deshaun Jackson spot. It's obvious, it's irritatingly obvious, it's annoyingly obvious, and it's chasey. Everybody knows Deshaun Jackson is a deep threat wide receiver, and he's seen great chemistry with Jameis Winston, and well, they just gashed them deep this week in Philadelphia. So I think it's a great spot for. I mean, everybody watched it. Everybody saw the Nelson Aguilar highlight. Everybody knows Deshaun Jackson can run deep routes. It is obnoxiously clear that this is a good spot for him, and it sets up as a total trap. The problem is on paper, this is not a trap. This is a great spot for both sides, and it should be a shootout because Tampa Bay will let you pass it. And when a team that only throws the ball comes up against Tampa Bay, a la the Giants, Eli had a huge game. He absolutely peppered people with targets, 10 targets for each one of his receivers. It's really, 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 really difficult. The thing that I will say, the reason that I'm kind of off of it, Arizona offensive line, terrible, absolutely terrible. And the Arizona defense, solid at home. So if there's something for me to say that maybe Tampa Bay gets to Palmer, it's that they're going to be able to get to the quarterback. Okay? That's part of it, maybe. And the Arizona defense has been much better at home. I mean, Prescott only threw the ball 18 times against them that Monday night game, and he was by far the best performance that they have allowed in Arizona. I mean, Brian Hoyer and Dak Prescott. So, I mean, is Jameis Winston better than Brian Hoyer? Yes, but is Jameis Winston better than Dak Prescott? I don't know. I mean, and Dak kind of had, you know, he had a couple fluky, like that fluky one long ball, but it's not crazy that you could see Jameis throw one deep as well here. So it's a very trappy spot. It feels really, really weird. I don't know. I'm going to have to really dive into it this week before I give you guys clean and clear takes on it. Cleveland at Houston, 45-point total here. Houston, heavy, heavy home favorites, favored by 10. They're getting an implied team total of 27 points to Cleveland's 17. Yeah, I mean, the Deshaun Watson train keeps rolling, no doubt about it. I mean, Cleveland is 32 in AFPA to the quarterback, 18 to the wide receiver. We know that Houston has been top 10 across the board, above average across the board, and we're certainly not interested in any Cleveland fantasy assets here. But I am interested in a couple things watching from the Cleveland side before I talk more about Hopkins and Watson. The Cleveland side, I'm very interested to see them start Kevin Hogan. I think that Kevin Hogan will get the start this week. If they don't start Kevin Hogan this week, then Hugh Jackson's surrendering the season. He's saying that we're going to be committed to developing DeShone Kizer. You've given DeShone Kizer plenty of snaps. You've given Kevin Hogan two snaps in relief, and he's looked better in both of those situations. There's zero reason for Kevin Hogan not to start this game. You really got to wonder what the hell is wrong with Hugh Jackson if he puts a quarterback out there who keeps turning the ball over. The whole team's going to kind of scratch their head and go, why? Coach, he can't get us the ball. And Kevin's been fine. Like, give DeShone a year to get it together. Give him some more practice reps. Let Kevin Hogan go out there and play some ball. That's all I'm interested in the Cleveland side, just watching, waiting, and seeing how that all develops. As far as Houston goes, man, I mean, you can't – it is fade at your own risk. It really is. It's going to be fade at your own risk going into this game. Deshaun Watson, priced pretty up there. So, you know, we have seen wide receiver ones absolutely torch this team. But here is a small tidbit. Devin McCourty has been playing excellent in individual coverage. Like, absolutely excellent. He's been very, very good. And he started shadowing A.J. Green in week 4. They didn't shadow before this, but he started shadowing A.J. Green 97% of routes. And he held A.J. Green to only 2 catches and 31 yards. The touchdown came before that. And he wasn't guarding him on the touchdown. So, A.J. got the touchdown, not against McCourty. So it is a situation where you're likely going to see McCourty shadow Hopkins here. And if that happens, then I think it's a very simple pivot in one of two ways. You either pivot simply to Fuller, or you just play a naked Deshaun Watson and you don't try to guess whether or not he's going to hit the tight end. You don't try to guess if he's going to hit Bruce Ellington or, you know, Lamar Miller out of the backfield. Like, you just play a naked Deshaun Watson and then you get exposure to this passing offense. So that's how I've approached Houston. I think let's keep a very close eye on whether or not McCourty is going to shadow. But I'm likely going to think that he's going to shadow. And, you know, Hopkins is an incredibly talented guy, but Devin McCourty has been absolutely on fire this year. So I have less interest in Hopkins, who will be chalky, especially with Fuller over there getting so many good red zone looks and running good routes and showing good chemistry with Deshaun Watson, no doubt about it. Pittsburgh, Kansas City, this is going to be a real fun one just to watch on the main, on the afternoon there, 4 o'clock game on CBS. In Arrowhead, 46-point total, 25 points for the Chiefs at home, 21 implied for Pittsburgh, Kansas City -4. Listen, you can't play Ben on the road, but Kansas City is a reverse funnel, and this secondary is getting annihilated. They are 13 to the quarterback, 4 to the running back, 29th to the wide receiver. Excuse me, that's the funnel, not the reverse funnel. The reverse funnel is the Jacksonville. We don't let you pass, we let you run. Pittsburgh is the reverse funnel. 4 to the quarterback in AFBA, 4th fewest, 19th to the wide receiver, allowing plenty of production to to the running back, 19th to running back, and 4th to the wide receiver, allowing plenty of production to running backs. I mean, we've seen this. We've seen this in numerous weeks. We saw Fournette annihilate them. We saw Howard annihilate them. We saw Alex Collins come in and get 8 touches and absolutely run over them. So there are certainly some issues as far as Pittsburgh's rush defense is concerned, and there's certainly some issues as far as Kansas City's pass defense is concerned. So you instantly go, Antonio Brown and Kareem Hunt, let's do it. And I don't have a problem with that. I have no issues with that. Hunt had 32 touches last week. He's number one in the NFL in all-purpose yards this year. And he has faced really solid rush defenses in the last 3 weeks. Philadelphia, Houston, Washington. Now he goes up against a team that's getting smashed. They got smashed by Jordan Howard. They got smashed by Leonard Fournette. We talked about it. He finally gets a really, really solid matchup with a rush defense. I really, really like Hunt this week. We saw him in his last rush defense, against the last bad rush defense that he faced, was the Chargers, 165 yards, 2 touchdowns, I believe, if I remember that correctly. And the Chiefs, man, they allowed 5 wide receiver touchdowns on Sunday to a rookie quarterback. You mean to tell me that you don't think Antonio Brown can get, he has 2 games on the road this year, aside from the Baltimore game, 2 games on the road this year where he has over 100 yards receiving against Chicago and Cleveland. And Kansas City clearly struggling with the wide receiver touchdown. You got to like Antonio Brown to help keep this offense in the game, no doubt about it. I don't think I'm going to play either of the quarterbacks. I just didn't know, and I can't. I would rather touch the weapons who I know will get the volume, and that for me is Hunt and Brown. I'm very interested in them this week. San Francisco at Washington, 46.5-point total, 18 implied for San Francisco, 28 implied for Washington in this one. Washington about 10-point favorites here. I love naked Kirk Cousins. I love naked Kirk Cousins, okay? I know that sounds slightly sexual. Maybe it is. And who are you to judge? All right? What if, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe I do have a Kirk Cousins Michigan State poster in my adult bedroom that my wife, you know, doesn't love. She always decides, you know, maybe we should take it down. No, we shouldn't take it down. Maybe we should leave it up. Maybe we should leave up Kirk Cousins there. Sparting on, right? She thinks it's weird. I don't think it's weird. San Francisco, 21 in quarterback production, 29th to the running back, 28th to the wide receiver, and 3 to the tight end and AFPA. They are allowing a ton of production here. Washington, 6-3-8-5. This is a good defense. Washington is a good defense. Let's make sure we ingest that. This is a good defense. Not like we were going to play San Francisco anyway on the road here, but this is a good defense. Washington, the reason that I love Kirk alone, solo, is that it is really hard to predict their skill players. We have not seen anything consistent. As far as the backfield goes, Kelly had the ribs. Now he's got an ankle. Okay, fine. P. Ryan is getting touches. Last week, Chris Thompson was a complete non-factor against the Chiefs. Okay, that's frustrating. And we know that Chris Thompson is like a McCaffrey, Tevin Coleman type back who needs to get, volume in the passing game and then turn it into yards after the catch. So it's kind of hard to feel like he can be one of your bell cows in a cash lineup. It really just doesn't seem like it's necessary, especially on FanDuel. Now, I have the perfect spot for Chris Thompson in any lineup is a DK flex position where you want a cheap guy who's going to get receptions and has massive upside. Boom, boom, baby. That's kind of how I treat that personally, which is, you know, I mean, it's trite, but you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel there, but that's kind of how I do it. It's an easy way to think about it. On the wide receiver side, Pryor hasn't seen more than five targets in like since week one. He caught a touchdown last week, but that was on three receptions. Crowder has only one game where he was worthwhile as far as yardage and production goes. Jordan Reed has 100 total receiving yards on the year. And Josh Doctson only has three receptions. Period. And now he's injured again. You know what? If you twist my arm, the only guy that I'm going with is Pryor and possibly Thompson. I guess you could go to Samaje Perine, but he's been in good spots. He's gotten volume. He hasn't been good. He really hasn't been good. It worries me to even go to a guy who's that inefficient. There's just no reason to go there unless you're really, really trying to be unique. I do love the Skins defense. And by the way, I mean, that's why I'm saying to get exposure to this offense who should be able to score and should be able to be productive via Kirk. Kirk is the way to do it. It doesn't matter if he throws a touchdown to Doctson or Cousins or to Thompson or to, you know, you get access to those touchdowns via Kirk. So I think that that's the way to go. George Kittle? Yeah, there's only really one way to attack Washington, and it's kind of at the tight end position. So 29th in AFPA to the tight end this year. That's definitely the way to go. Definitely the way to go. That's it. But I'm not, I mean, it's chasey. It's very chasey. So just to be very clear, Green Bay at Minnesota, 47 total here, 25 to 21. 25. This is a weird, I wrote down the numbers, but it's like, yeah, roughly 25 implied. There's some decimals and I forgot to write them down in my notes. Roughly Green Bay is favored by 3.5. Okay. For an implied team total, 25. There are, you know, divisional games in general in the NFC North make me a little bit nervous unless it's someone playing the Packers or the Bears, playing the Bears or the Lions in certain situations. I really like that because, you know, you kind of have a defense that you could traditionally be a kind of a whipping boy in that division. Although Detroit, not really so much this year. They instantly make me think under. They really do. And then there's a lot of data to suggest that anytime a team sees a team for the second time in a year, they will hit their under. The second time you see a team in a given year, it's way less exciting. So this is the first one. Here's the problem. Inside of the division against teams like Detroit and Chicago, Rodgers owns. He absolutely owns. But against the Vikes, he's minus 1.68 in his last 3 years. The time to play Rodgers is against the Bears and against the Lions. Now, he's not playing the Lions yet, but we're going to see it. And when he plays the Lions, we're going there. He's only scored 19 points each time he's been on the road in Minnesota. So I don't really love this spot. I don't love this spot for Rodgers. You know, Green Bay themselves, 18th to the quarterback, 17th to the running back, 24th to wide receiver, first to the tight end. I think you can definitely fire up Stephon Diggs on this side. We've seen Case Keenum in a couple matchups use Stephon Diggs, but he really does seem to be a boom or bust proposition. You look at his game logs, what he's done. He's either getting, you know, four targets or 8-10 targets. And remember, one of those games, the best game he had all year was with healthy Sam Bradford. And healthy Sam Bradford does not exist anymore. Okay, so playing with Case Keenum means we have a 1-in-4 game sample size in which he was successful with Case Keenum. 1 out of 4. Is he still an elite wide receiver? Yes. Yes, he is. He is. On the Green Bay side, and by the way, Diggs did have over 2 matchups last year with Green Bay, 13 catches, 200 yards and 2 TDs, touchdown in both games, 160 yards in one of them. So it's very possible that we see a big one from Diggs in this spot. No doubt about it. I mean, wide receiver ones against this team, Kevin King, also the corner who shadowed Dez. He's out with a concussion. If he doesn't clear concussion protocol, I think that really changes things for the secondary, because he's actually been halfway decent. Minnesota, 9th to the quarterback, 6th to the running back, 16th to the wide receiver, 22nd to the tight end. I mean, there's just so many damn weapons in this offense that you really know Minnesota is not going to be able to win this game. They're going to win. Green Bay should be able to cover, no doubt about it. It's Davante Adams, and it's chasey and annoying, but Davante Adams is going to get Trey Waynes, and if Jordy plays, which he was kind of had like a hamstring thing, he's going to probably get Xavier Rhodes. At least that's my thought. And you know, from a side of the field perspective, that's how they align. That's my thinking. So you got to look at Adams again. You really do. You have to. I don't really think I want to look at the running backs here. You know, the Packers are a pass first team. So Aaron Jones, I'm not going to chase that. But yeah, that's where I'm at with this team. Miami at Atlanta, 47 point total in Atlanta. Atlanta coming off the bye. They are favored by 11 here, 29 to 18. God, Miami's a terrible team. They really are a bad team, and it's a lot of it's just their offense, really. They're fine defensively. They're limiting fantasy production. They're 14th in AFPA to the quarterback, 11th to the running back, 13th to wide receiver. Here's the issue, and the reason that we need to go, whoa, wait a second. How do those numbers come about that they're actually average? They have faced Castle and McCown in two games, who barely eclipsed, like, McCown threw for less than 200 yards, and Castle threw for less than 150 yards. Okay? Terrible. Breeze and Rivers, however, the other two quarterbacks that they faced, they've dominated them. Breeze, 30-plus points in London. Okay? Rivers went for 331 with an 80% completion rate and an 118 passer rating. The secondary is not that good. The front seven is not bad. Their rush defense isn't that bad. It's their back end that hasn't really been tested, and their back end isn't that good because they haven't seen any really good quarterback play. And when they've seen good quarterback play, good wide receiver play, they've given up production. Michael Thomas had a good game against them. Keenan Allen had a good game against them. I mean, it's all there. So Ryan and Julio are in play. Devonta Freeman in play. No doubt about that at all. He's a home favorite here. He has been absolutely excellent this year against a defense that, you know, I mean, hey, as a rushing defense, they are good. But as a defensive unit as a whole on the road here, you got to think that they're going to give up some degree of production. And especially with Freeman's possibility for red zone work. I mean, he is the red zone guy. So for them, the goal line go. The question that I have about Julio and Ryan is, can they run and hide with this game? The thing about a wide receiver that is favored this much, you look through the history, the logs of this trend of favorite over 8 points, and it's one of two performances. It is massive, because this team is terrible against the pass, and good wide receivers go out there, they shred, they do what they're supposed to do, and all is well. Game script or not, first half they get it done type thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they go into halftime with 6 catches, 75 yards, and a touchdown, and you're like, well, great. Anything after this is gravy. Or they just are completely invisible. And that's kind of been Julio's thing. When he's favored by this much, he is a beast or he's invisible. It was literally everything. I was looking at when the total goes up, really like up over 9 for them. I saw only two historical occurrences. And one, he had 26 points. And the other one, he had 3. That's not fun. That's not fun, because what you're dealing with is the reality of the game script. He could explode and destroy this team, and it's over because of him. Or they could destroy this team without him, and then they just don't need him, especially if he's banged up. So kind of a frustrating and difficult thing to project here, that you want to buy Julio. I'd buy AB over him first. Even with Ben on the road, I would buy AB over him first just because of the the need for Antonio Brown in that game versus the possible possibility of Julio getting scripted out in the third and fourth quarter. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much. New England and the Jets, 47.5 points here. New England implied for 28.5 points, 9.5 point road favorites. The Jets implied for 19 points themselves. Listen, the Jets have scraped together a few decent games here. Wins at Cleveland and against Jacksonville at home. This is not a good position for them. Okay, they're still 27, 31, 28 in AFPA to the core positions, wide receiver, running back, quarterback, wide receiver, and running back. The backfield for the Pats, you want to go after them because this is such a good spot. We've been attacking the Jets with running backs on the regular, but it's just too hard to decipher. It really is. I mean, it feels like a great week for Gillislee to hammer the goal line, but we know James White gets the most snaps and the most work. He has, you know, he's like second in the team in targets, and he leads, you know, he's always like second in the on the team every week in receptions. So I just can't guarantee anything, but I do think that you can go get Pat's GPP exposure from the running back core. It's really easy to go Brady. I have no problem going Brady here. I mean, if they allow any scoring to, you know, Elijah McGuire and Josh McCown, which I don't really see them doing, I think that we'll see Belichick get under Todd Bowles pretty easily here. You could definitely go to Brady, and they're going to throw the ball a little bit, no doubt about it. And Hogan is his number one receiver. We discussed this yesterday. He's the fifth-ranked fantasy receiver right now. 5 total touchdowns, tied with DeAndre Hopkins, only 1 behind Jordy. I mean, that's phenomenal. You just have to tie yourself to elite quarterbacks. There's a reason that Jordy and Hogan are right up there in touchdowns because of those two quarterbacks that they are tied to. It's really funny, even with only 60 yards per game. That's what he is doing. He's not their leader in receiving yards, but he's their leader in targets, and he's their leader in touchdowns on the Patriots side of things. The Jets, I mean, they're an intriguing GPP play because the Pats are just as bad as the Jets, 29. Two quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and 27th to the tight end. I mean, you could easily go to maybe you go to McCown just for volume and negative game script, and you hope that he throws a couple touchdowns, but I think it's a really, 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 really risky play, and there's a very good chance that the New England defense found something last week, and they said, okay, here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to do it. That could be a very good, and, you know, I mean, they only hung 20 points on the Browns. How viable is this offense? If you're only to hang 20 points on the Browns, you're not a very effective offense. And they just lost Bilal Powell. So, I don't know. Elijah McGuire, maybe. That's about it. Chargers, Oakland Raiders. This line is not out yet because Derek Carr is rumored to be playing. If I'm the Raiders, I'm not playing Derek Carr. You saw Sam Bradford last night. That's your season. That's your season right there. I know you're struggling right now, Raiders. Listen. You lost game to Baltimore. You lost the game to Denver. You lost the game to Washington. You're 2-3. You're sitting in a rough, rough spot. Okay? I get it. Don't get me wrong. You don't put Derek Carr in a situation where you lose him for the season if he gets hit on the backside tomorrow or on Sunday. Like, just don't do it. It's not worth it. You got the Chargers. The Chargers, you can run the ball against them. Trust the run, hammer the run, let EJ Manuel manage the game, see if you can, you know, scrape together a couple turnovers. Problem is, this defense has been an issue. It really has. In Oakland, I'm setting the line at 49. This line hasn't been released, but I set it at 49. Chargers implied for 23, and Oakland implied for 26 as 3-point home favorites if we see Carr play. This is the if Carr plays line, the injured Carr line. This is it. Oakland themselves, 26, allowing 26 most points to the quarterback, 18 to the running back, 22 to the wide receiver, and 12th to the tight end. The Chargers, 12th to the quarterback, 27th to the running back, and 23rd to the wide receiver, and 2nd to the tight end. The whole Chargers tight end thing is over. They figured out how to stop it. they saw it on tape and they're like, nope, can't happen. Let's adjust. And then they did. They did. It, you know, Evan Engram is gone. Was gone last week, so it's over. We're not going to Jared Cook this week, but we can think about some of the Chargers' fantasy assets, namely Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon. You know, listen, these are the volume guys. They got back to the rush with Melvin Gordon last week. He had an excellent game, and we see Oakland is ranked 18th overall in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the running back. Definitely like them here, and I think you also like Keenan Allen against the team that's ranked 22nd. He continues to see double-digit targets. The volume is just so predictable. The price is so easy to swallow. There's a lot that lines up for Keenan Allen, and I know I talk about him a lot, but it's just – I don't like to project touchdowns. I like to project volume. You get yourself into trouble when you try to project touchdowns. You are in less of trouble if you try to project volume and hope for touchdowns to come with. Fair? And you can always project Keenan Allen's volume. So there's that. On the Oakland side, I mean, you love Marshawn Lynch. It just doesn't make sense. You know, your 27th ranked rush defense. We saw the Giants put up their best rushing line of the year against this team. It's just Marshawn's not going to see more than 15 carries. So you get 15 carries and maybe he maxes out at 65 yards and a touchdown. Is that worth it? I think he's a GPP flyer. I think he is a cheap touchdown option on FanDuel for guys who want to say, I'm going to spend up in other places. I just want a cheap touchdown on my RB2. I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. He's not going to get any passing work, and he's probably not going to see more than, you know, 70 yards rushing in a good game script. You know, that's what it is. As far as Cooper and Crabtree, one of them's going to go off. They have good history here, too. That's the annoying thing. They've done it here before. Crabtree scored in every single game he's played against the Chargers. Cooper has two absolute beastly games, one of like 80 yarder and a touchdown, one for 130 and a touchdown, and two complete duds where he barely caught two balls. My question is really who's going to get shadowed? Who is going to get shadowed here? Whoever gets the shadow treatment from what's his name? The corner, not Verrett. Verrett's out for the year. The other one, Casey Hayward. Whoever gets Casey Hayward is in trouble. The other one is gold. You know, I mean, and we look at Odell last week and everybody goes, well, maybe elite wide receivers against it. You bite box score chase. If you didn't watch the Odell touchdown, the corner bit on a play action and Odell ran free. He faked like he was going to block. The corner bit on play action and Odell ran free and they just threw it over the top to him. And he had a 10-yard advantage before the play even started, basically, because he went full sprint down the sideline. Eli found him. It's kind of a trick play. So it's kind of a freak, you know, a freak occurrence. Here's the problem that I have with rostering this game at all. The history of what we have seen from DFS production in teams against, I mean, we rostered Denver in week 4. We rostered Washington wide receivers in week 3. We kind of questioned the production of the Giants wide receivers because it just really wasn't completely there. It wasn't actually very clear or consistent. That makes me a little bit worried about Keenan Allen. Is it really an opportunity for us to attack this Oakland secondary? I'm not really sure. As far as, you know, attacking the Chargers, I just don't know if you can go to the pass catchers. We haven't seen, you know, we haven't really seen them get torched. I mean, Philadelphia, nobody really torched them. And we saw Zach Ertz be successful. We saw, you know, the Odell touchdown, but I just explained why that happened. So it's very difficult for me to feel, I mean, Miami was okay. It's just very difficult for me to feel like I can understand exactly who's going to produce here beyond. I feel comfortable with the highest volume assets, which is basically just Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon. And then I'm a little bit anxious about it. Highest total on the main slate, Detroit, New Orleans. This one is juicy for sure. 50-point total here, 27 implied for the Saints, who are 4-point home favorites over Detroit. The line moved to -3.5 for the Saints. Or excuse me, from 3.5 for the Saints to 4.5 for the Saints. So people like the Saints right now, but the total dropped. People like the under. So they like the Saints, but they like the under. And I think that's just because you see some interesting defensive. Detroit's been solid in AFPA to all the positions except for the tight end. 26th to the tight end. We saw them allow tons of production to Dixon last week. We saw Engram have a breakout game against them in week two. This is a Fleener spot, no doubt about it. New Orleans is actually struggling a lot with the running back. They're not struggling as much with the wide receiver. They're struggling a lot with the running back. 27th in AFPA to that position. These are the weak spots here, the tight end and the running back here. Abdullah, very interesting tournament play, but we saw his volume get cannibalized last week. Very frustrating. Theo Riddick got all the passing down work and hurry-up situations. Zach Zenner got the goal line work. So it's literally the worst-case scenario of exactly what we thought might happen in the Detroit backfield. So as much as these teams kind of have proven to be better against the quarterback and the wide receiver than expected, and their AFPA marks are better than we expect, this is a situation where I think we favor Vegas over AFPA. Okay. Like we did with Dak, last week in the Packers, because Dak against the Packers, the Packers were pretty solid in AFPA coming into that game, but we knew that they had some weaknesses, and those weaknesses correlated with teams being able to just move the ball on them. So certainly an interesting spot for Stafford and Breeze. No problem with either of those guys. They are very much in play. Of course, Breeze at home, hugely in play, and you're going to stack him with Michael Thomas regardless of what we're going to see. Does Darius Slay worry me? Yeah, he does, but I think Michael Thomas is a great receiver, and I think, but I also have no problem with, if this is another team where it's hard to project who's going to get the volume, so you can play the quarterback by themselves with maybe one of the cheaper assets. You know, you could play Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara in a tournament together. You can play Matt Stafford in a, Marvin Jones together, or something kind of cutesy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I don't think that these two teams defensively are perfect. And the thing we have to remember is New Orleans, if we're going to attack them, we got to remember, even though they've been kind of pesky in the last couple games, New Orleans struggled massively in the first two. And then, they limited Carolina, they limited Miami. Well, okay, Miami's bad. They're just bad. They limit themselves. Carolina, that was, the last game before Cam's breakout when he actually was successful. A divisional game where they know what the offense is going to look like. All that kind of stuff. Detroit, last couple games, they were excellent against Arizona, Minnesota, and the Giants. They were great against Larry Fitzgerald. They were great against Stephon Diggs. They were great against Odell. They struggled 1 week in Carolina. So it's kind of a very, very difficult to get a sense of exactly what you expect from this game. And you kind of understand why people are betting the under. Maybe they're saying these defenses are better than we think. So there's some cautious optimism for me here. And I mean, I definitely look at the quarterbacks because I think, it's the kind of thing where everything flows through them in a high total game. But that's it, guys. Monday night game, man. Don't play the Monday night game. Tennessee is, without Mariota, they're facing, who is it? They're facing, I just remember going, I'm not going to write about the Monday night game today because people, it could very well end up a game just like we saw last night. It is Tennessee versus the Colts. No need. In Tennessee, no need. I mean, maybe some running back exposure, but that's one of those slates that you just kind of avoid. You fade because there's no variety. It's difficult to win on those small slates. I don't really love those spots. So anyway, guys, that is it for me. Good luck in all of your contests, and we will be back tomorrow with the player breakdown, and we'll see you then.